From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made on a high school stage where a young woman with a big voice was just starting to find herself. Zahaya Roll has said in interviews that sometimes it's just assumed that black people are not supposed to be rock and roll, but she loved glam rock. And as she grew into her massive voice, she found that she wasn't all that interested in fitting into a single, tidy category of music. No matter what the industry wanted or what stereotypes were out there, she wanted to just be herself. And maybe if she had tried to fit into a single, easy category, she'd be a household name by now. But Zahaya has carved her own way. And you can hear echoes of countless genres in her music. Jazz, hip-hop, funk, soul, and of course, glam rock, grunge. It's all there. And she's going to bring it to the stage at the Little Theater with a full band tomorrow night. We've had the chance to talk to Zahaya from time to time as part of panel discussions. And this hour, we get to know one of the biggest local talents one-on-one. Zahaya, nice to see you in studio here. You've got a big smile on your face.
I do.
I'm so glad to talk to you in studio. Thank you for making time.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
And listeners, you're going to find Zahaya's work in a number of places. Her website is zahaya.com. It's Z-A-H-Y-I-A. Z-A-H-Y-I-A.com. Zahaya Roll, my guest for the hour. The show tomorrow night at the Little starts. The doors open at 6:30. The show at 7:30. Tickets available. It's at Little Theater Number 1 with a full band.
Yes. Some amazing musicians. I'm really excited to be with them.
And I know you appreciate the wide range of musicians who, you know, that you work with, because as we said, there isn't one easy, tidy genre for you, is there?
Yeah, no, there's definitely not. And even I feel when I think about the guys that I enjoy working with, they all come from very different backgrounds. And that excites me because, you know, creatively, when we get together, there's just cool stuff that happens. And you never know where somebody's going to take it. And you're just like, oh, yeah. That's cool. Let's go there. Are we doing salsa right now? We are doing salsa.
Absolutely. And you've told Rochester Beacon that performance is just so central to you that it's kind of like your drug or therapy. Mm-hmm. And it's where you feel the most comfortable. Not every musician does feel equally comfortable on stage as they would in a studio because trying to replicate sound or, you know, maybe not every musician or singer is the same quality performer live, but for you, that's where it's at, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. That's my home. I think I started performing on stages when I was like 3 years old. I was in a Little Mermaid. I was a seahorse, and I was just addicted. Like between that,
a seahorse.
Yeah, I was a seahorse, and I was the happiest seahorse.
Did you have any lines?
Nope. I had no lines. All I did is just hop in my costume, and I was like, "This is the best."
Man. I played Shep, Old MacDonald's dog, in a school play. They gave me a role with no speaking roles on purpose.
Oh, my gosh.
I tried out for all the speaking roles. They're like, we're going to make you the dog.
Oh, my gosh.
So they made you the seahorse at three, though. But
yeah.
by the time you got a little bit older, you were starting to have, you know, I mean, like. I want to know when the first time you remember singing on stage with an audience was.
I think I was around 11, and I begged my dad. My dad's a jazz musician, and I remember just begging him to come to one of his gigs. He's always going on gigs, and I was just, I want to go, Dad, let me do. So he gave me the real book, the jazz standard real book, and he was like, you learn these, and you can come on stage. So I did. I sat down, and I was like satin doll all day long. I was like, okay, I'm going to learn all this. And then I remember I was like 11. It was 12, because I also had wrote my first song. And so my dad let me perform my first original song on stage with him. And that's what kind of, yeah.
Do you still remember that song?
I do.
I'm not going to ask you to sing it.
You know what? I actually have it on cassette, because when I was in college, I decided to record it. And then it was part of like a EP demo that I did it when I was at U of R. And I still have some of those copies. They're going to be on sale this Friday at the merch table.
Let's go. Tomorrow at the Little Theater.
Yeah.
that's just so beautiful. There's something really nostalgic about cassette tapes, isn't there?
Yeah, there is.
Like your kids, my son, like they will never understand what it's like to have to rewind to the spot to play it again.
Yeah. It's so true.
Or flip it over and be like, where on the B side is this song?
Yeah. Or even like a funny thing. When I was younger, I had two boom boxes. And I used to, in order to figure out how I sounded in harmony, I used to play, record myself on one.
Wow.
And then I'd play it back and then harmonize with it and record it on the other one. So I'd be like.
That's awesome.
My own ghetto multi-track.
Are you the type of person who, if you're like driving and you hear a song you like, but there's not a high harmony, will you just sing a high harmony with it?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And sometimes you go like, why isn't there a high harmony?
Yeah, exactly.
My guest is Zahaya. Zahaya Roll is with us, who's just such a big talent and performing at the Little Theater tomorrow night. I hope that as time goes on, there are more of these introductions for the listening public to people like Zahaya, because one of the common questions we sometimes get is, you know, how do you make the jump to a national stage? How do you go the Joy Wave or the Danielle Ponder route? And, you know, Zahaya and I were talking before the program that for you, it's interesting because people inevitably are going to talk to you as a Black woman about, well, you know, Danielle Ponder, and, you know, mm-hmm. you're this big talent. And I kind of wonder if that's like a blessing or a curse.
Yeah.
What has that been like?
It's been interesting because that does happen quite frequently. And people will say, oh, well, you know, you got to do the way Danielle did it. And I'm like, yeah, I understand where people are coming from with that, but I'm just a totally different personality. I'd like to think I'm a bit more weird, which I'm okay with that. Like, I identify as weird and I love my weirdness. So, it's just understanding myself and being true to myself and understanding that it's okay if people want to compare me, but knowing that eventually it'll show. I'll be accepted, and if that makes sense.
When you do see local bands or local talent that makes the jump nationally, does it fire you up a little bit? Does it push you a little bit more?
Yeah, it does. I think it's great. First of all, I have to say, I love Rochester, the city, the talent overall that we have here. I see it as when one makes it up, there's just more room for all of us to really kind of be on that and come up as well. So, and there's other ones who I think about, who I also respect, who I believe have pretty much made it, like Roses and Revolutions.
Oh, yeah.
And, well, now Lyle from that same kind of outfit. I also really respect people who are just on the verge as well, like Cammy and Charles Emmanuel. So, I don't know. I see this as a hub. I see that, you know, Overhand Sam, even Michaela Davis, like we've got so much talent. We're like, in my opinion, culturally similar to the scene in Seattle during the 90s when people are just like, wow, all these amazing bands that are coming out of Seattle. And like, what is this grunge thing? Like, you know, that's Rochester. That's us.
That is such an interesting comparison. But you also key in on a point that in Seattle in the 90s, Seattle was grunge.
Yeah.
That was the home of grunge. Mm-hmm. You're describing Rochester as a hub of young talent that, kind of like yourself personally, isn't just one genre.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, you know, I've had a couple of brothers try to make it in music, and I see kind of the seedy underside, you know, that can be really frustrating.
Yeah.
When a producer or an agent or the industry, mm-hmm. you know, wants to kind of shoehorn you in and narrow your focus, or kind of like cut the edges off your creativity so they can fit you into whatever narrow box they think is going to make it or sell now.
Yeah.
And I wonder if that makes it harder for someone like you who doesn't really fit a genre.
Yeah, it does. I've honestly been told that my entire life. I've been told, oh, well, you know, you just need to shift over this way so that people can understand what you're doing. And I honestly have more hope in humanity than the music industry does. I really believe that humans are more open-minded than the industry will let us believe. And that as long as people just stand firm with what they're doing and just keep at it, that it'll eventually get where it's going to go.
I know it can kind of be a little bit soul-deflating too when you're in music because you love it, mm-hmm. but the industry feels like it doesn't understand you. And we welcomed a couple months ago, we talked to Don Potter, who, you know, Don is still performing a lot, but back in the 70s when he was kind of coming up on the Rochester Finger Lakes scene, and then they had a chance to break through and go to New York City and work with the producer, He goes down there to New York City, meeting with a producer who's done a lot of big names in mm-hmm. sort of the folk rock scene. But this guy's yelling at Don saying, this is the song you're going to do. We're not going to do your music. This is what you're going to record. And this is what's going to make you a hit. And he said, and he did it. But it didn't feel good. And within a couple of years, it was like, I don't even know who I am. I don't want that.
Yeah.
And I can understand Zahid, some people saying, look, I'm just going to do what it takes. I will do whatever they ask me to do because I love it and I want this to be my career. I can also understand people who say, that feels gross. Like, I don't want that. And that's not who I am. Yeah. And I wonder what your mindset is on all of that.
Yeah, I'm definitely in the that feels gross. I've been there. Like, okay, now I'm seriously dating myself. So for all of my people who are listening, who are also in this dated category, here we go. When I was younger, I was approached by a record label who wanted to produce me and do all this stuff, and my father was pretty much like my manager. But their big vision for me is that they wanted to be like with a girl group. So they wanted to pair me up with other people, kind of like they were comparing me to Sweet Sensation. That's sort of like, you're going to be, you know, like Sweet Sensation. That was like the 80s group at the time or whatever. Or Lisa Lisa Cult Jam, like
TLC, whatever.
TLC, yeah. Actually, TLC wasn't around yet.
Okay.
That's how old. But like, you know, so that's where they wanted to put me. And I remember my dad brought over my demos that I had wrote when I was in high school, and he gave them to the production team. And he was like, all right, these are the originals she has. And they took them into the studio. They were like, okay, great. We're going to get our team on it. We're going to make this all polished. It's going to be great. And then we'll add the other vocalists to it. Well, when we got the demos back, my father was like, can I say pissed on the radio?
I think that's about as far as we can
that's
go.
That's as far as I can
I think
go.
You okay. can say it.
That's, yeah, he was pissed. He was like, what did you do? Like, they basically had watered it down and taken all the authenticity out of it. And I just remember how angry he was. And he was like, you don't need to do this. And he told me, he was like, you just keep doing what you do. And eventually it'll catch on. You might be ahead and people will catch up. And I remember just feeling like, all right, like, I'm okay with that. And even if it happens after I'm gone from this little earthly plane, I'm even okay with that. That's why I am. Wow. I know. It's like,
I mean, I wonder if you ever think, look, if I would have just gone with what they wanted, even if it didn't feel right, then eventually I get to write my own script. But there's no guarantee that you do get to write your own script eventually if you kind
right.
of, I don't want to use the word sell out. Not everybody who makes these decisions are selling out, and that's a loaded term. But if you make a creative choice just to kind of make the change that they want, my guess is you do it because you're betting that eventually you'll get to do what you want to do. And I'm not sure everybody
right.
does.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Although I do have, like, again, I could be like really Pollyanna-ish about this, but I do have hope. And I'd even use the most recent example of Andre 3000, his new album that dropped. So prior to the one that came out this, like, just a few weeks ago or last week, he's always been hip hop. He's always been like, people are like, oh yeah,
yeah,
Outkast.
I'm not aware of the new album.
Yeah, he you know, was with Outkast, and he's like, yeah, yeah. Hey Ya, play Hey Ya. Like, that's
everybody's gonna say play Hey Ya forever.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I've got things, philosophies about that too, but like but you know, up until that point, that was all he was, is a hip hop artist. And then last week he releases this flute album. And he's like, it's all meditative and like
wow.
bubble bath music. And people are like, what? But they're accepting it and they're streaming it and they're accepting where he is as an artist right now, which I don't know if that necessarily would have happened 20 or 30 years ago.
That's really interesting.
So that's why I say, like, I think there's hope. Like, we're seeing that people are like, yeah, actually, if I think of myself as an individual, even just as an individual human, I'm not one thing. Why would I expect the artists or celebrities to also be just one thing?
I think listeners are finding out why we wanted to sit down one-on-one with Zahid. We're having a wonderful time talking to such a massive talent, Rochester's own Zahid Roll. And Zahid is online. You can find it at Zahiya, Zahiya.com. Zahiya's music's on multiple platforms. We're going to talk about that in a moment. And Zahid is performing live with a full band tomorrow night at the Little Theater One. Tickets available. The doors open at 6:30. Performance starts at 7:30. And I would be very surprised if you were not blown away. That's just I'm not allowed to be a paid endorser, but I'm just a proud fan. And let me also say that we've been talking about the power of live performance. Zahaya has talked in interviews, and I want to ask you about this, about what that little window was like in the pandemic where you were trying to perform sort of online without an audience, and and you said you found out real fast that that did not feel right.
Yeah, that is not for me. Shout out to all the people who could do it. Like, God bless them. But it's not for me. I feel I'm very much a feeler, very much connected to the energy that's created from the musicians that I'm surrounded by and from the people who are there to experience something. And I don't know. There's nothing. You can't replace that. And it's different every single time. And each human who walks in that door, they're now a part of that whole experience that's going to happen. You can't get that online.
So there's no way. That's why these live performances are so important. And I also want to ask, before we listen to some of Zahaya's work, I want to ask about what has really changed. You know, you said that you've had a career that's seen some change in the music industry. Mm-hmm. In fact, you go back to the days of George Clinton.
Yes.
What's the George Clinton connection?
That's the year I was born, and I am so proud of that year. 1975 was a beautiful, but even if you think about it historically, oh gosh, I'm going there. Okay, even if you think about it historically, like 1968, we lost Martin Luther King. There is like, we had all these rights. Black Americans are experiencing all these rights that we hadn't had before, and now there is like, you know, what is that, 7 years? 6 or 7 years that we're like now like, yeah, we're doing this. And then here comes George Clinton in a bridal gown talking about space and where we're going and freeing us from these limitations that were placed to the Black music scene prior to that with Race Records and all of those things where we were not allowed to integrate musically the way that a lot of other people are. And we you know... So for me, 1975 is like just the beautiful blooming. And then after that, we got Stevie Wonder and Songs of the Key of Life and like all these other things that started coming out, these beautiful musical babies that. So, yes, I'm very proud to be connected to that era.
Songs in the Key of Life may be the best album of all time.
Oh, my God. Absolutely. I feel like Stevie's a prophet. He's a prophet.
but the George Clinton, the idea there is really the birth of it's okay to sort of be weird a little bit, right?
Yeah, yeah. And David Bowie got to do it before him.
Well.
But like, well, and I guess Sly and the Family Stones, like we had Sly. But really, that was like, it was that time frame, you know, where we were going from just being categorized as soul artists to really like releasing into this whole new territory. So
I want to play a clip from a different artist talking about life as in a streaming world. Because for a long time, one of the ways that, you know, bands were trying to make it was you would start recording music. Maybe you would do it independently. You'd sell as much as you can, sell a little merch, but you sell your music on the albums, the tapes, the CDs. And as you made some money there and you moved those the physical copies around, maybe they get in front of somebody, maybe you get a deal and then you can sell more. Now... we are raising human beings to assume that they can get everything for free. And I want to listen to some of what Weird Al Yankovic said about streaming. Listen.
That's so cool.
Hey, how you doing? Al here. Look, I'll make this really quick. I just want to thank you all for your amazing support. It's my understanding that I had over 80 million streams on Spotify this year. So if I'm doing the math right, that means I earned $12. So, enough to get myself a nice sandwich at a restaurant. So, from the bottom of my heart, thanks for your support, and thanks for the sandwich.
It's comic and tragic, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. It is. Wow. And you know what? Oh, gosh. Ooh, this could go dark because I actually understand completely from a different perspective now of this... younger culture. I don't want to insult anybody. I'm not really into, you know, judging based on just age because, you know, we should not be ageist. But there are a lot of young people who are really just expecting everything to be free. And I'm seeing it firsthand now that I'm teaching in the city school district. It's just, you know, they get free software. I mean, all kids do. Like, this is not a city thing. Across the board, we've got so much free software. We've got access to information on YouTube that we never had before. And just like the rabbit holes you can go down is incredible. So I relate hard to the expecting free.
Yeah. And so I wonder, well, I mean, I guess part of the newer formula is touring and live performance. And, you know, I was watching an interview that my son's favorite band did because they've got a new album out and they're going to tour. And one of the guys in the band was saying that not every band loves to tour. Not every band can tour as much. And not every band can, you know, sell out bigger venues when you tour.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can't, now you don't have the backstop of actually selling records in any form.
Yeah.
Because people aren't paying for the music. So if they're not paying to see you live, and which, by the way, that's where the merch sells now. It sells at live shows. Then you're at a big disadvantage. And so you're more limited and you've got to play live and there's a lot of pressure on that. And there's not as many diverse areas to make money or try to make a living off this. What do you think?
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. And then, I mean, Yudi didn't even mention how now some venues are expecting a percentage of the merch sales that happen, or even record labels with the 360 deals, where they're now like, anything with your name on it, when you sign on this label, anything with your name on it will be income back to the record label until you pay off whatever upfront production costs you had.
Yeah. I think in the late 90s, early aughts, when one of my brother's bands was doing some regional touring, there was a band out of Pittsburgh that got one of those $250,000 deals. And everybody around them was like, oh my God, $250,000. Like, you guys are. And that contract sunk them.
Yeah.
They didn't really sell the album that the label made. And the label just basically said, well, you owe us $250,000.
Yeah.
it's not like you get the money. It's like an advance that if you don't earn, now it's an IOU.
Yeah.
And they couldn't get another deal. And that was the end.
Yeah. Which is scary. And I am grateful that we don't have to have record labels anymore to actually get our music out there. But again, like this thing where if you're not performing and touring, there's no other way. I'm at a loss. I love ideas, but if you don't have a clothing line or makeup line or any other merch that you can really capitalize on, then you're not going to earn anything.
Yeah, and I don't think you're unfairly maligning younger adults. I think what we're looking at is just a cultural shift, a societal shift, that you and I are of the age in our 40s that we've lived through this bridge time.
Yeah.
And now I'm a journalist, you're a musician, you're a performer. Both of us are now living in a world in which you used to pay for journalism, you used to pay for music, and now you expect to get it all for free.
Yeah.
Without understanding the possible consequences of that. I'm not really blaming anybody. I'm not trying to punch down.
Right.
I do think that there needs to be better education of those choices that we're making.
Right.
Because the impact's going to be, the Taylor Swifts are going to be fine.
Mm-hmm.
The New York Times is probably going to be fine. But the middle and the smaller are going to be hollowed out and left behind.
Yeah. Oh, gosh. And we can go dark with that. Because even like you use the example of journalism, and I even think about how like not having local news,
yeah,
how that's affected, because, you know, top down journalism is not good.
Yeah, no, absolutely right. I mean, you have to have local coverage. We see the consequences. We've tried to cover it on this program. I hope listeners have heard some of those conversations, because there's a real cost when your small local paper is gone.
Yeah.
When the local journalists who used to be in your newsroom are gone. XXI is holding the line. We are very fortunate because of our supporters and our members and our listeners. But boy, it's tough. And in music, it's pretty similar.
Yeah, I mean, very similar.
There's some interesting parallels there.
Yeah. Yeah. Because you lose the creativity, that organic creativity and the creation of scenes that happen. And that's how we got all these new genres of music. Like, if it wasn't for the cultural impact in Chicago, the cities of Chicago during the 50s, we wouldn't have doo-wop, or, you know, pick a genre. Like, it all started because there was a cultural experience that locally we felt, not a record company telling us exactly how we should be listening things, or our algorithms keeping us in a little bubble of our oral experience. So,
well, after we take our only break, let's come back and let's listen to a little bit of music if we could. And we're going to talk to Zahaya about how she creates music. And, you know, again, if you're just joining us, Zahaya is performing tomorrow night at the Little Theater. You can learn a lot more about Zahaya at her website, Zahaya.com. It's Zahiya. Don't expect to find easily categorized music. And that's part of the point. We're going to kind of get into what it means to kind of cross genres, to be a little weird, to be yourself, and to be creative. And that's all coming up after this break. Coming up in our second hour, my colleague Scott Feibusch is not only a longtime professional in public broadcasting, but he dabbles in comedy. And Scott is going to be joined by a couple of comedians who are featured as part of the Wait, Wait Live Tour. The Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me team has so many talented folks, and you're going to meet Alonzo Bodden, Emmy Blotnick, with Scott Feibusch next hour. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Sometimes people ask us, like, hey, you should put the next Joy Wave, the next Daniel Ponder on your show. You know, the next band that's going to make it, the next singer that's going to come out of Rochester and be on the national scene. And I like to think that we talk to a wide range of performers, sometimes on panel discussions about the state of the industry, or just try to get to know them. And this is our chance to sit down with someone who I think probably should be there, but is not going to go any way but her own way. And that is Zahaya Roll, who's with us. And Zahaya's in studio. David writes from listening in Vancouver, Canada. Kind of reminds me of how the Beatles managed to escape their early constraints. I hope it gets a whole lot easier than having to be at the absolute top of popularity just to pull it off, though. That's from David. It's kind of what we're talking about,
yeah,
right?
Yeah,
yeah. So, David, thank you. And said during the break, Rob sent us a note. Vanishing Sun was the best band in Rochester. Who was Vanishing
Definitely.
Sun, Zahaya?
Vanishing Sun, oh, my baby. We miss Vanishing Sun. But yeah, that was like actually really where there was so much involved with Vanishing Sun. There was a collaborative writing that was happening that was absolutely
beautiful. How many people involved?
Six of us, right? Yeah, six of us.
And for how long?
And we were together for 3 years, I think, maybe four.
And then the pandemic.
And then the pandemic. Yeah. So it was really like experimenting. We were pushing boundaries. We're like, where can we take this and how can we take it there? Just, I think the whole philosophy behind Vanishing Sun was, how can we make what seems to be a space where musically we're not supposed to go, how can we make that feel like it's supposed to happen? And it was a lot of fun. Like, Ian Sherman on keys would do a lot of experimenting with detuning and like taking these weird sounds and now adding these delays that will be in sync and then out of sync. Like, and then we had Quinn Lawrence on saxophone, who's just like, in my opinion, Rochester's Coltrane. And then we have, Luis Carrion, who is just a bass master, who is very big in the salsa scene, if anybody in Rochester is familiar with the salsa bands. And it was just a really amazing collective.
Well, let's listen to some of your music. And
okay.
I'm going to ask you to describe a little bit of The Hire before we hear it.
Okay. Ooh, okay. So The Hire, there's layers to this song that I guess I should mention. The first one is that I wrote this after reading Octavia Butler's Parable of a Sower and Parable of Talents, which I don't know if you've read it at all. It's a really amazing post-apocalyptic series. So Octavia Butler is the same one who wrote Kindred, that I think a lot of people are familiar with. And I really enjoy her work. And when I read that, I felt like we were living it. Like, a lot of people would be like, oh my gosh, Handmaiden is what we're experiencing. But for me, I felt like Parable of a Sower is what we're experiencing, to the point, well, I don't want to give anything away in the book, but for anybody who wants to read it. But basically, this song I wrote as me kind of imagining what the people from the Earth Seed Collective, which is basically a fake religion that evolves from this, from a prophet that's made up by Octavia Butler. It's like, what would they do? How would they sing and celebrate? And that's where this song kind of is coming from. So it's incorporating a lot of things that are more basic drum type rhythms with spiritual, take us to the stars kind of stuff. So yeah,
let's listen.
A lot.
Yeah.
These extraterrestrial races are directly connected with the earlier civilizations of Tiwanaku, of the Olmecs.
I've been living inside these two new extremes, watching the demise of all humanity. Take me up on the higher.
Oh, comrade.
Take me up.
The higher that we're hearing here. Yeah, there's a lot of layers there.
A lot of layers.
When you're creating a song like this and it's in your mind the first time, is this what you're hearing in your brain?
Yeah.
You're hearing all of that stuff.
Yeah, I do.
That's amazing.
And then I got to figure out how to translate it from my brain into my DAW software. It's basically what happens.
Wow. Like, what are all the different elements that need to go into this?
Yeah. Are you asking me to answer?
Well, can you give us a little bit of a light in there?
Yeah. I will say for this one, I just kept hearing this choir. So I was just like, oh, this is a gospel choir and there's drums and they're dancing. And where is that? And like, I wanted drums that I can feel in my butt. Like, if I can be honest, like, I wanted
That's an interesting way to describe what you're looking for.
You know, like, you'll feel it all the way through your body down to your butt. Like, that's what I wanted. You'll probably never have me on this show again.
Are you kidding? That's, like, one of the best things we've heard all year.
But, yeah, and, like, that's what I kept hearing. And I was like, it needs to move me somewhere. And that's where this is supposed to be, movement towards the stars. So we're starting in like this earthy space and there's this destruction that's happening between us trying to exist as spiritual people. That's what's happening in the book, spiritual people versus like the materialism overtaking and destruction of humanity because of the materialism. And what does that sound like? And yeah.
How much science fiction do you read?
If I'm not reading a fiction book, it's sci-fi. So I don't know when I have a chance. Yeah.
You're like the conduit to these ideas of science fiction into a musical realm.
Yeah. Yeah. I get a lot of inspiration from it. Like, I think my biggest things that inspire me are human experiences. Just like, you know, every day, like if we sat and talked and I had lunch with you and you're just telling me your life story, that would be inspiring to me. Not knowing what it is, but even just simple things, it inspires me. Or sci-fi, so it's like extremes.
but interestingly enough, sci-fi really does often make us think about. It's not all just sort of little green men and aliens,
right?
It's asking us to think about our own possible future existence, coexistence, annihilation, and why, and the choices we're making that could lead us in those directions. Sci-fi has been pretty prescient at times. And obviously, you see some parallels to what's going on in the real world here. You know, some of the themes that feel kind of rough. You know, world is kind of a fire sort of thing.
Yeah. No, absolutely. And I think, yeah, even I'm thinking back to like Brave New World. And that I think that actually that book kind of catapulted everything for me with the sci-fi track, because, I mean, that was like an apocalyptic also type experience of, you know, the savages versus the advanced humans who are of Ford, the Ford realm. But there's something to me beautiful about those apocalyptic sci-fi books and movies where the humans are the heroines, the humanity and the love of individuals for other individuals just unconditionally is like really they're the heroines. And I think that's why I'm so attracted to that genre specifically.
Let's listen to a different clip. We've got Foul Soul Child.
Yeah.
You want to tell a little story here too? There's a story here.
There is a story. This one, so a lot of my stuff does have spiritual themes. I think because of like my choice to love humans and just like, I don't know, we got to have something to save us from the monotonous grind that we exist in. But
can I ask you just kind of, can you talk a little bit about your faith?
My faith?
Your sure. religious ideology?
Sure. So first I should say, I'm not really a fan of religion, but somehow I ended up as a Baha'i. And really for me, the Baha'i faith encompasses so many aspects of just my core beliefs. And those are things like the science and religion must agree that the oneness of humanity is really the only thing that we need to be working towards and doing everything that we can. Like, to me, it's an activist movement. It's like I am actively going to change things about myself as an individual and then share that with others in however way that I share it without dogma and without expecting people to also come and join this religion. So that in the Baha'i faith is like a central thing. And that's what kind of I think that's why I'm so comfortable there. And
sorry for this diversion, because we're going to get back to the song in a second here. But let me to make clear, because I'm not very well educated on Baha'i. Mm. It seems infused with humility and love and generosity, I would think.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Like one of my favorite quotes from a prayer that kind of saved me in a lot of ways is that it said, "Make me a hollow reed that I may bend into conformity with such pleasure that all my stillness and movements will just be directed by thee." So it's like, to me, I interpreted that as like, there is something greater that exists than us. And I don't have to make these harsh decisions that I think will make or break me, because if I free myself and allow myself to, some people will just call it tap into the positive energies of the universe, that you will end up being led down the path that you're supposed to go. And so, did I get off track?
No, this is the track I wanted you on. This is great.
Yeah.
It also seems to me that way too often we think about religion or spiritualism and science as perfectly in conflict instead of, occasionally, you know, working in some cohesion. I mean, when you read all the science fiction you read and your conclusion is, look, I don't have to claim I know everything about the inner workings of the universe or adopt a modern religious ideology, but I feel spiritual. I feel there's something bigger. I feel connected in many ways to it.
Absolutely.
There is something that is beyond just, it's not scientism. There is something spiritual there. Adam Frank has written about it, and we've talked about it on this program. I think there's a lot of beauty in that. There's a lot of humility in that.
Yeah.
I find that really interesting.
Yeah, I love that. And I'm glad you brought that up, because I'm going to call this person a spiritualist, even though he claims to be an atheist, but Stephen Hawking, The Grand Design is one of my favorite books. I've read it like twice because there's so much in there that I didn't understand about quantum physics that I'm not a quantum physicist, but I did study philosophy. So when I read that book and saw how he came to his own theories about matter and antimatter and the way that everything works in quantum physics, to me, I was reading that and was like, that's spirituality. That is what it is. The idea that there is no space between us. We are directly connected. We're like, you know, I don't know, to hurt someone else is to hurt myself because we are connected through this matter that we cannot see, this energy that we cannot see that exists between us.
So why do we hurt each other so much?
Man, I honestly think ego, I think ego is a terrible thing. I think, yeah, we definitely have to have some type of self-worth and self-identity. But when it takes over to the point where you cannot see the humanity in someone else, then like we've already lost. And now we're trying to protect ourselves. Now we're like, oh, you know, I'm on defense now because my lion heart has been hurt. And now I have to attack rather than taking a step back and be like, my lion heart has been hurt. Let me understand why. And now let me communicate that to you or any individual who I would want to hurt.
One more question. We're going to get back
to
this. Where do you find community?
Oh, I feel like I'm a part of like 17 communities, which I see as a good thing because it keeps me from being too isolated. Like, I also think that that's an issue that we often have in American culture. And unfortunately, it's perpetuated by social media because we can instantly delete somebody who doesn't think like us. But I find my community with my family. I find my community with musicians I work with, and I'm fortunate to be in a situation musically where I get to work with so many different musicians from different genres when I'm in like the wedding and corporate world because of Silver Arrow. So I'm very grateful for that because I meet people who I never would have been able to interact with because they're in a different genre circle. And then I find community in my spiritual, with my spiritual community, with Baha'is, and my neighborhood. I love my neighborhood. Shout out to Seneca. Woo woo. And I also find now my new community, which I'm actually very proud of, is my community at Franklin Lower, the city school I'm teaching at right now. Like I love those students. I love the staff. I feel like I'm part of a really amazing situation there.
Amazing. Rich in Rochester on the phone before we hear one more cut from Zahia. Go ahead, Richard.
Hey, how you doing, Evan?
Good, sir.
I've been listening to, and I like what she said. I challenge her in her her defining of Stephen Hawking as a spiritualist. Mm-hmm. As an atheist, at myself, I experienced the world. I experienced the beauty of the world. I experienced the beauty of the universe and all that. It doesn't make me a spiritualist because I see the world is bigger than me. I think he defined who he was, and to say, I have a big problem with the word spiritualist. It can mean anything. That's one thing. But because I love mountain climbing, I love seeing these things, and I see the beauty of it, it doesn't make me a spiritualist. I it's the language. I'm sorry. It sounds like I'm crapping on the thing, but
that's fair.
I challenge that to anybody.
Yeah, I actually don't see a whole lot of difference between what you are saying here, Rich, and what Zahia has said. I understand why you wouldn't want to define it as an atheist yourself, why you wouldn't want it defined as spiritual. But when Zahia says, you know, well, Stephen Hawking comes off as actually pretty spiritual, she's not saying like, I think he's a Christian, or I think he like, you know, I think he's Jewish. I think like, she's saying that there is a sense of wonder and awe Mm-hmm. And if Rich doesn't want to use the word spiritual, I think you're okay
yeah,
with that.
Yeah, that's totally fine. Yeah. Yeah, and that's, I mean, I will say too, words matter. And one word to me can completely be interpreted by somebody else. There's also life experiences that end up being attached to certain words. And I understand that too. And I'm glad he called in and said that, because it reminds me that, you know, depending on your life experience, it's going to be something that can really be triggering and be like, you know, actually, I really don't like that, which I understand if it's something that makes somebody uncomfortable. But I love uncomfortable. I think, honestly, everybody needs to be a little more uncomfortable, because that's how we grow, in my opinion.
I need to get more Baha'is on this show. And Rich, thank you. As always, Rich, fair and strong points. Thank mm-hmm. you for the phone call. Let's listen to, we've kind of set up Foul Soul Child. Anything you want to say else about this song before we hear some of this tune?
I guess the only other thing is that Quinn Lawrence is killing it on saxophone. Alan Murphy from Mighty High and Dry is playing piano on this one. And Louis Carrion on bass. And then I had Byron Cage, who came in from Syracuse and did the drums. We actually recorded it in one day. So it was like a live session. We just, you know, the guys, we all came in, no rehearsal, went in, and this is how it came out.
Let's listen.
Selfish ways that you love cause pain, this habit of needing all of my fears and my good vibe energy.
So, you're just getting a taste this hour. Listeners have gotten to meet Zahaya this hour. Is this on the menu tomorrow night?
This is on the menu
tomorrow
night.
This is on the menu tomorrow night at the Little Theater, 7:30. The show starts. Doors open at 6:30. Zahaya, a full band. This is just one of a little taste of what you're going to get. And as we get ready to close here, what do you want people to know about what tomorrow night is all about in your mind?
Tomorrow night will be an experience that we will all create together, like between the musicians on the stage and the members of the audience. Like, we're all going to create something together. And I really believe that we're all going to walk away feeling good about life, empowered to do more towards the betterment of society and in our own little ways.
I'm looking at the way that the little is describing it. The little describes it as elements of jazz, hip hop, rock, music, theater, funk, soul. And you've even in the past said occasionally it's jazz funk meets thrash metal. You've done everything.
Oh, yeah.
You've done it
There's
all.
That too. We're going everywhere.
You're going everywhere. You're going
there will
everywhere.
Be gospel. There will be everything. Yeah.
How hard is it at this point in your career to pare down a set list?
Not that hard, honestly, because I I do everything based on themes. I have, honestly, I'm a philosophy major from U of R, and that's done something to the way that I plan things. So,
and I want to close just by saying the voice that we hear in your music, it's always amazing to me when I meet people and have conversations and then that voice comes out of somebody. It's really beautiful.
Thank you.
You have a gift that you're sharing with the world, and I admire that you're doing it in the way that feels right to you. No matter what that means, and no matter if that's harder, there's just something to be really, really admired about that. Listeners can find more, and I'll close by asking where you want them to find your music. What's the right way to engage with your music?
Oh, that's a fun question, because I'm going to say Spotify.
That's okay. Hey, that's the answer. That's the answer.
Yeah, I mean, because, you know, venues look at that. They're like, how many streams do you have? I was like, ah, well. So, yeah, Spotify, Apple Music, YouTube. For anybody who is a rebel and is going to stay true to the cause, YouTube.
And, we'll close with just that taste of Zahia's music. Zahia.com. ZAHYIA.com. Now you know Zahia. And now, you know, if Zahia's the next one out of Rochester to end up on national or international stages, you say, I remember when we met you on Connections. Hey. You probably should have known her by now. Great having you.
Thank you.
Congratulations on all this beautiful music. Have fun tomorrow night at the Little Theater.
Thank you.
And we've got more Connections coming up.
Selfish ways that you love.